You know, it's funny how we use the exact same word for finding something we've misplaced and finding a person who is lost. Like you lose your keys, you check an app, it pings, and boom, you find them under the couch cushion.
Right.
It's just this binary process. It's simple.
Yeah, but I mean, keys are completely static, you
Yeah.
know? They don't have internal experiences. They don't have panic attacks or experience sensory overload. And they
Exactly.
certainly don't wander off just because they're overwhelmed by like the sudden noise of a passing garbage truck.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And when we talk about keeping a neurodivergent child safe, people often try to apply that exact same lost keys logic. We assume that just putting a generic digital pin on a map is going to solve everything. But today, we are completely throwing that logic out the
We
window.
really are.
We are doing a deep dive into this really fascinating 2026 guide from AngelSense. It's titled Autism Monitoring Devices: Complete Guide for Parents. And for you listening, our mission today is to completely move past this outdated idea of a tracker as just some kind of, digital leash. We want to look at how purpose-built, highly specialized assistive technology is actually becoming a tool for true independence. Okay, let's unpack this, because this topic is just this perfect intersection of technology, psychology, and, well, inclusive design.
What's fascinating here is that we are looking at a total paradigm shift in how we approach safety.
Yeah.
We're moving away from the concept of simple location tracking, you know, just that isolated dot on a map, and we're moving toward comprehensive, proactive safety and communication networks.
Right, it's a huge leap.
It is. It's a shift from merely tracking an object to actively supporting a complex human life that's navigating a really complex world.
And to really understand what a dedicated autism monitoring device actually is, we kind of have to start by looking at what it isn't. I think the most logical place to jump in is the most common misconception out there, right? Like, why the everyday consumer tech that you and I already have in our pockets or attached to our keychains just completely fails in these scenarios.
Oh, totally. That's almost the universal starting point for parents. They realize their child has a tendency to wander, which is clinically referred to as elopement, and they immediately look at the consumer market.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, they see generic GPS trackers, things like Geobit, ProPod, or Apple's AirTag, and the thought process is completely understandable, right? Like, I'll just get a fastener, attach this little chip to my child's jacket, and if they wander off, I'll pull up my phone and find them.
But sticking an AirTag on an autistic child is like using a baby monitor to secure a bank vault. I mean, it's just fundamentally the wrong tool for a highly complex job. Keys don't have panic attacks or sensory needs, And AirTags specifically, they have this massive limitation built right into their core design that makes them incredibly risky.
They do, because an AirTag doesn't use true independent GPS to transmit its location to the wider world.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it doesn't have a cellular connection at all. Instead, it relies entirely on a Bluetooth mesh network. So it's basically pinging off of other Apple devices that happen to be nearby to piggyback their internet connection.
Oh, I see. So if there's nobody around.
Exactly. If a child wanders into, say, a wooded area or a quiet suburban park or anywhere where people aren't actively walking past with iPhones, that tracker essentially goes blind. The location just stops updating.
That's terrifying.
It is. Those devices are engineered to find a misplaced backpack in a crowded airport terminal, not a human being in distress in an unpredictable environment. And furthermore, these small chips are completely non-interactive. They have no emergency communication functions.
Right, they're entirely reactive. They're just waiting for you to come to them. But wait, why not just use a smartphone?
Yeah.
I can see a listener thinking that. I mean, everyone has one, right? And they have true independent GPS antennas built in.
True.
You've got apps like Life360, Google Maps. If the problem with an AirTag is connectivity, why wouldn't a parent just hand their kid a fully functioning phone?
Well, it sounds like the perfect solution until you actually test it in practical, real-world application, and then it falls apart for a few critical reasons.
Okay, like what?
First is power management. Smartphones, with their massive screens and background apps, they drain battery life incredibly rapidly.
Oh yeah, my phone dies halfway through the day.
Right. So if a child elopes, meaning they leave a safe area unsupervised, which happens unexpectedly, you cannot be in a situation where you lose their signal simply because they, you know, played a mobile game earlier that afternoon and drained the battery down to nothing.
I want you, the listener, to just imagine that scenario for a second. Imagine discovering your child is missing. pulling up your tracking app, and realizing you're relying on their phone's battery holding out at 2% during a literal life or death emergency.
That
is pure terror.
It happens far too often with generic consumer tech. But the second issue with smartphones is accessibility. Operating a smartphone requires a baseline level of fine motor skills, executive function, and cognitive processing.
Which can completely go out the window during a meltdown.
Exactly. Yeah. During a moment of high stress, a neurodivergent individual might entirely lose the ability to navigate a touchscreen. Using an app to call for help means unlocking a screen, finding the correct icon, navigating a menu. When we talk about purpose-built tech, it has to completely bypass all those barriers.
You know, thinking about this, my first instinct for nighttime wandering wouldn't even be a wearable device at all. I'd probably just install Ring cameras, motion detectors, door sensors. The guide mentions a lot of parents do that. But looking at it, I realized the terrifying blind spot there.
Yes, the protection completely ends at the property line.
Right.
Wandering is a 24/7 risk. Knowing a front door opened at 2:00 a.m. is absolutely critical information. But once the child crosses the threshold and is out of the house, those stationary sensors are useless. They can't tell you whether the child turned left toward the busy street or right toward the woods.
So if generic tools fail because they treat humans like lost objects, what does a device actually look like when it's engineered specifically for a neurodivergent mind?
Well, this brings us to the highly specialized technological solutions, and it starts with the tracking mechanism itself. We aren't just talking about standard interval GPS where a device checks in like every 5 or 10 minutes.
Because a lot can happen in 5 minutes.
Exactly. When a person is moving on foot, especially a frightened child whose behavior might be erratic, an update every few minutes leaves massive geographical gaps. You need continuous, real-time data that updates every few seconds.
And the guide also emphasizes that this continuous GPS is complemented by indoor tracking, right? Because GPS signals famously drop out the second you walk into a large concrete building, like a mall or a school.
They do. So the purpose-built monitors use local Bluetooth and Wi-Fi signals to actively fill in the spatial gaps. If the device loses line of sight with the GPS satellites indoors, it immediately switches to mapping local wireless networks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it pinpoints the wearer's location inside the building, ensuring there's never a blind spot in the tracking continuity.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. The AI component. The guide talks about artificial intelligence that automatically sets geofencing borders. It's not waiting for you to manually open the app. It actively alerts the caregiver the exact second the wearer leaves a safe boundary.
The underlying mechanism here is really impressive. The AI doesn't just draw a static, arbitrary circle around a house. It uses machine learning to monitor the device's movement patterns over several weeks.
So it learns their routine.
Exactly. It learns spatial and temporal routines. Say it learns that on Tuesday at 3:00 p.m., the device is usually traveling on a specific route from school to home.
Okay.
If the device suddenly deviates from that highly specific pattern-like moving toward a nearby highway at 10 a.m. on a school day, the AI flags an anomaly and instantly pushes a high-priority alert.
That is incredible. And then there are the communication features. The guide highlights an auto pickup feature. When I first read this, I thought, oh, it's just a standard phone call. But it's completely different.
It really is.
It's almost like having a digital telepathy link. You don't have to wait for the child to fumble with buttons or answer a screen.
Mm.
The caregiver initiates a one-way connection, and the speaker just opens up.
Mm.
You are instantly there in the room with them, able to soothe them and listen to what's happening.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to understand the specific autism profiles these features are addressing. You frequently encounter this very dangerous combination of elopement tendencies paired with severe communication barriers.
Right, like if a nonverbal child gets lost.
Exactly. If a nonverbal child wanders off, they cannot ask a passing stranger for help. They can't explain where they live. So the auto pickup feature, along with specialized SOS buttons designed for severe physical limitations, it bridges that communication gap. Instantly.
And the physical hardware has to support all this without failing. I mentioned battery life earlier. To solve that, these devices use intelligent hibernation modes, right?
Yes. The internal accelerometer detects when the wearer isn't moving, like sitting in class or sleeping, and it puts the high-drain GPS antenna to sleep. It preserves the battery for when they're actually in motion.
And the casing is built like a tank. Thick plastic, heavy rubberized edges, fully waterproofed.
But beyond durability, the engineering has to account for sensory-friendly design. Many autistic individuals experience profound sensory processing disorders.
Right.
A simple scratchy clothing tag can feel like sandpaper and be completely unbearable, let alone a clunky piece of hard plastic strapped tightly to her wrist.
Yeah, if they hate how it feels, they're just going to take it off.
Yeah.
And a monitor left on a bedroom floor provides zero protection.
Exactly. So manufacturers combat this by using highly specific, non-irritating materials. The edges are completely seamless and rounded, and they offer a wide variety of wearing options, specialized belts, lanyards, or even hiding the device within the lining of clothing.
That way the user isn't visually or physically irritated by it.
And they can't easily remove it during a moment of distress.
Having a Swiss Army knife of features is great, but autism is this incredibly vast spectrum. So matching this tech to individual human needs is huge. Like, a teenager taking the bus needs different monitoring than a child living near water, right? Mm.
Customization is the only way this technology succeeds. You cannot apply a one-size-fits-all approach. A teenager navigating public transit needs transit route monitoring. But an 8-year-old living near a lake requires hypersensitive immediate boundary alerts because water is a critical danger for autistic wanderers.
And obviously communication tools are critical for nonverbal children.
Right.
Wait, I have to push back a little here. If a child has level 3 autism and is under constant 247 caretaker supervision, why would they even need a tracking device? Isn't someone always watching?
It's a very logical assumption, but it deeply underestimates the terrifying reality of autistic wandering. Elopement can happen in a matter of moments.
Just from turning your head.
Yes. A caregiver turns their back to take a pot off a stove or signs for a package, and in those 30 seconds, the child is gone. The tracker is a failsafe, not a replacement for supervision.
That makes total sense. It's the ultimate safety net. And this tech isn't just for emergencies either. These monitors have everyday well-being features, like step counters, pill reminders, and integration with school administrators.
Which is why the better suppliers offer extended trial periods. Families absolutely need hands-on experience to see if a device's weight and interface actually work for their child's unique sensory profile.
Yeah, and frequent software upgrades keep the tech evolving. But to truly grasp the weight of this technology, we have to look at real-world emergencies. The guide lists several real-life rescues resolved by AngelSense. Let's look at the nonverbal 8-year-old dropped off at the wrong bus stop.
Oh, that's a perfect example.
Imagine the sheer panic. An 8-year-old who cannot speak in an unfamiliar place, maybe near traffic. With a generic tracker, the parent just sees a dot miles away and has to race there, hoping the child doesn't wander.
But using purpose-built tech, the parent got an immediate AI alert that the child hadn't arrived at the expected school geofence. The parent instantly used the auto pickup feature.
So they could hear what was happening.
Yes. They could hear the traffic and the child's distress. They spoke directly to him, told him to sit down, and kept him calm while the continuous GPS guided them directly to his exact location.
Wow. And there's another example that really stuck with me. A parent used the auto pickup feature to keep her autistic son calm during a violent lockdown at his high school. He was terrified, prone to a meltdown that could have drawn attention to his hiding spot. She didn't use it to find him. She used the intercom to actively soothe him in a dangerous situation.
It's incredible. And when you look at those deeply impactful examples, you inevitably run into the ethical boundaries of tracking another human being.
So what does this all mean? This feels like walking a tightrope. You're balancing ultimate safety with what is essentially putting a wire on a human being. How do families navigate that?
This raises an important question, and it's a complex conversation within the community. It comes down to legality, privacy, and intent. Legally, for parents under 18, tracking a minor for safety is perfectly legal.
But the dynamic changes the moment they become a legal adult, right?
Yes. Once they turn 18, depending on guardianship status, it becomes a matter of obtaining the individual's explicit permission. The relationship transitions from parental oversight to consensual support.
There are also school policies to navigate. Many schools ban mobile devices to prevent cheating. If your safety tracker functions as an open cellular intercom, that's a direct conflict.
To solve this, sophisticated devices provide scheduling features. Parents or administrators can temporarily disable the communication tools during class hours. The passive GPS is still active for safety, but it completely respects the school's privacy rules.
And we absolutely cannot ignore data security. The fear of hacking and someone eavesdropping on your child through that intercom feature is horrifying.
Data security has to be foundational. The guide stresses vetting suppliers for strict data privacy policies. We're talking end-to-end encryption of all location data and strict hardware-level protocols that block any third-party recording.
Right, the digital security is just as critical as the physical safety. Well, we started this deep dive exploring the illusion of generic trackers, the idea that finding a lost key is the same as finding a lost person. And from there, we've traveled through sensory-friendly design, life-saving AI, and the delicate balance between surveillance and independence.
The overarching takeaway is that the ultimate goal of this technology is to support, not restrict. When implemented responsibly, this safety net actually allows for greater freedom and exploration.
I think for you listening, even if you don't have an autistic child in your life, there's a profound lesson here. Understanding how assistive technology is custom-built for neurodivergent minds teaches us so much about empathy and inclusive design.
It challenges us to look at all the tools we use and ask who they were originally built for and who is currently being left behind.
Exactly. And that leaves me with a thought I really want you to mull over as we wrap up. If today's AI can automatically detect physical boundaries and enable instant communication, what happens when tomorrow's assistive tech starts monitoring biometric data? Could future devices continuously monitor a wearer's heart rate and skin temperature to predict and prevent a sensory overload meltdown before it even happens? Imagine a wearable that gently guides a person to a quiet space before their nervous system is overwhelmed. That wouldn't just manage a crisis. That would fundamentally change how neurodivergent individuals interact with the world. Because as we've learned today, we aren't just looking for lost keys anymore. We're learning how to help people safely navigate their own lives.